Good morning. I was sitting there during the song before communion, and I was thinking to myself as the slides went haywire, I have, in the course of life, been the guy who makes the slideshow. I've been the one who advances the slides, and I've been the one up here panicking, wondering what slide is coming next. And that's a bad feeling all the way around. I was the guy who made the slides back in Searcy before he came here. And anytime something like that would happen, you would see my eyes get really big sitting there in the crowd wherever I was, thinking to myself, okay, did I do that? Or did the slide person do that? Or were the slides messed up to start with? There was actually one time I found out that they came wrong from the people who made the slides. They had mixed two up and I didn't catch it. So anyhow, Ken, thank you for making it through and with your voice too. I know you're struggling this morning. Good to be here today. Glad to be here with you guys. A lot going on during the holiday time of year. First of all, before I forget about it, thank you to everyone who showed up on Friday for our work day. We had a work day Friday morning followed by some pizza, and enough folks worked hard enough that the work was all knocked out for the most part Friday morning before the pizza came, which was good. A lot of carpet torn out upstairs, some painting done. And we're hoping here in the next week or two to have all that carpet, new carpet in, all the painting done, and kind of a new area upstairs, which we're pretty excited about. And then once we get a little bit into it and everything moved back to where it needs to go, we'll have an open house and everybody can prep themselves to go upstairs once and go check it out and see what's up there. And like I mentioned in class this morning, we're still very thankful for the Vanderpool family and for the gift that was given so that we could do all of those things. And if you know that family or are in contact with them, let them know, again, that we're still thankful and they're going to come check all that out when it's done and see the work that was done. Also, it's Christmassy up here. And I'd say thank you to Cecilia, who came in, I think, on Thursday and did a lot of decorating around. There's poinsettias and there's lights and all kinds of stuff. We sold poinsettias in high school for a fundraiser, and my English teacher let me know it's either poinsettia or poinsettia. You can say either one, but poinsettia always stuck in my head after that. But it's fun to see the seasons change around here, and again, things that I would not have the first clue of how to do, so I'm glad there's someone who does and takes pride in that. We will be talking about the season as we get a little further into that, but for this morning, we'll still be in James chapter 1, if you want to turn over there. James chapter 1. Now, if you are reading your bulletin this morning, the office staff says thank you because it's good to know that someone actually looks at the thing once it's done. But you will notice in there that the title this morning is Sticks and Stones, which is a mistake on my part. That one actually is coming later, so you can save that title in your mind for somewhere down the road. But this morning we're going to be talking about listening and doing, which are maybe two things that we don't always do as well as we could. Beginning in verse 19, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And there was part of me as I was making out the PowerPoint for this that I thought to myself, I could really just go with one slide today and we could just do this and spend all our time here, because if we could master this going out of here this morning, everyone's life would be a whole lot different than it is right now. Now, some of you are good at this and continue to be an example to the rest of us. But for a lot of us, we struggle here. And so it's a couple things we want to notice. First of all, take note. And when someone in Scripture writes down the words, take note, inspired by the Spirit, this is one of those it's going to be on the test moments. There are things that you may think of that you, as you're in the course of a class or when you were in school or if you're a teacher, you may think of as a minor detail that you don't need to know for the test. And there are other things that are a little more important. Now, I took History of the Restoration Movement as a student at Harding, which is, if you're not familiar with the terminology, that's us. We're the Restoration Movement. And we in the Christian churches, somewhere back in the 1800s, decided that as a part of the groups that we were in, which were mostly Baptist and Methodist at the time, that we didn't quite like everything the way it was going. It felt like it wasn't quite what the New Testament was. And so all these guys got together and decided we should try to look at the New Testament, just do it that way. Simplify things a little bit more. And so there are these guys, Alexander Campbell and Barton Stone and all these guys got together, and they realized we want to do something different. And out of that developed us and the Christian churches and the Disciples of Christ. Now, somewhere along the way, because we like to disagree, there was disagreement primarily about music. And so now you find us and you find the Christian churches. Now, here in Oregon, something that surprised me is you'll find a lot of us with the instrumental music too, which confuses me. But anyway, not to get into the history side of things, but I took this class, History of the Restoration Movement, learned all these names and dates and things that I had never known before. There was a question on my History of the Restoration Movement final exam that was this: that phrase that you have probably heard in the Church of Christ at some point along the way, where the Bible speaks, we speak; where the Bible is silent, we are silent. That's one of those things that we've learned wherever along the way. It was not, here is that statement, who said it first? It was not, here is this guy, what did he say that he's known for? It was, here is the statement, here is the guy who said it, whose house was he in when he said it? And I remember getting to that question on the test and thinking to myself, are you kidding me? This is a test question? And I, of course, no idea. And I could have told you at the time, the guy who said it, who, if you'd, either way, you'd ask the question, I could have told you. But whose house was he in? No, I didn't know. Now, I had to laugh to myself when I went to the Harding Lectureship about 15 years after that. And the guy presenting in the lectureship, and I should remember all these details now, because clearly it was a moment in time for me, but the guy presenting at the lectureship said, and we all remember so-and-so when he was in so-and-so's house and said, where the Bible speaks, we speak, where the Bible is silent, we're silent. And I thought, he knew. He remembered, and it was on the test. When James says to us, take note, we need to really pay attention to what's coming. You have the warning that I did not have 20 years ago sitting in that class, which is take note, and then the next thing he says, everyone. Okay? Not elders, not deacons, not preachers, not disciples, everyone. And he's talking to, who's he talking to? Brothers and sisters. So those of us who are Christians, this is what you need to take note of and to do. And then he says, be quick to listen. Quick to listen. Now, we are quick to lots of things in life, but I don't know that quick to listen would be at the top of that list. How many of us hear what we want to hear? How many of us, as we try to listen, are already developing the next point in the argument so we can continue this on? How many of us, as soon as someone's mouth opens, we hear Charlie Brown's teacher from the cartoons? Wah, 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 wah. We have no idea what's being said because we are not quick to listen. We know what we want, we know how we want it, and we are going to act in that way. And so James begins with where the problem usually begins, which is be quick to listen. Go into the situation with the assumption, with the baseline, that the other person who is about to talk has something worthwhile to say. Doesn't mean it's always going to be something profound. Doesn't mean it's always going to be something that I agree with. Doesn't mean it's always going to be something that's right. But something that this person feels is important enough that they're going to articulate it, and so you need to listen. Quick to listen, slow to speak. Now, if I could just get to this point, I will have solved a lot of problems in my life. Because I speak before I think way too often. And I'm going to guess that I'm not alone. That there are several of us probably who struggle with that. I remember vividly sitting in elders' meetings when I was a 28-year-old youth minister with no experience. And having an opinion and stating that opinion on every single topic that came up. And I know those guys had to just occasionally say, who is he? Who has an opinion about everything? And why is he saying it all the time? And amazingly enough, I had a couple elders who practice this and would actually listen to the crazy opinions of the 28-year-old youth minister all the time and be very respectful about it. But somewhere along the way, I started to realize the guys in this room that are pretty respected are the guys that aren't doing what I'm doing. I need to slow down a little bit. I need to realize that even if I have something to say about everything, I don't have to say something about everything. Sometimes I can just listen. Sometimes for the men among us, this is where we get into trouble in our marriages, because we like to fix things. And if you tell me something that's going on, then clearly you're looking for a solution from me. And oftentimes, ladies will tell you that that's not what's going on. Just want to be heard. Quick to listen, slow to speak, and now it gets really tough, slow to become angry. Because some of those words that are said, which is part of why I thought about going sticks or stones this morning and later changed my mind, some of those words that are said can be hurtful. And it's very easy for us to become angry and to lash out and to give it back to that person. It's very easy for us to forget our place. It's very easy for us to forget who we represent. And so James starts as his baseline of this section. Everybody, take note. Quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry. And now if we can set that as our baseline, here's what will happen. Because human anger does not produce the righteousness that God desires. It does not produce. And we have to start thinking in terms of when I act, when I speak, when I do, there is something that comes as a result of that. And as is the case in most things, there are intended consequences, and a lot of times there are unintended consequences. I was thinking, as Ken was looking at slides and they weren't what he was expecting to come, and he's fighting his voice and everything this morning, song leading is a hard thing sometimes. Sometimes it goes great and it's easy, and sometimes you struggle a little bit. And I remember one time, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, but it fits really well here. I was leading singing and felt fine about things, and I got down, I was done leading singing, I walked partway down the aisle, and an older gentleman came up to me, was not here, by the way, so you don't start guessing who it is. Older gentleman comes up to me and says, "You know, you got a good voice, but what you're singing and what you're doing here doesn't match." And if it was coming from Tyler, it would have been one thing, because Tyler or Christina, they know. They're directors. They do all that kind of stuff. But just the old guy at church, and I thought, felt pretty good about this morning until right now. And my wife will tell you, I got in the car, and she's like, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, so-and-so said, but yeah, 7 years of band apparently didn't work. I don't know what I'm doing up there." And I next went to the deacon over song leaders and said, "Take me off the list." Now, overreaction on my part, maybe. I don't know. But that guy didn't realize that there was an intention of what he was doing, which is, young man, pay better attention to what your hand is doing and what your mouth is, you know, get those things together. His result was discouraging, shot me down. Now, am I a delicate flower and I should, you know, I get that. Sometimes our words don't have the production that we're looking for. And so what he says to us here is anger, which is often the result of not being quick to listen and being too quick to speak, the anger that comes with that, is not producing what you want. And I think if we step back and look at our lives, that's pretty true, isn't it? Think about the times you've gotten really, really angry about something. And where does that go? Think about the times you've got really, really angry with your husband or wife, really, really angry with your kids, really, really angry with your boss, how you have reacted to that, what you have done, and did the consequence that came with that, did the end result of that go the way you wanted it to go? And usually you have your moment to lash out and you feel better for about half a second, and then you realize your situation is either the same or worse. So don't rest on the anger, because it takes you to a place you don't want to go. Step back and think, all right, if I do this, what's the end result of this? If I do this, how does this person react? How does this person react? If I'm trying to change a behavior in somebody and I do this, is this going to help to change that? Is it going to reinforce the bad behavior that I wish wasn't there? Is it going to build a wall that's just going to make everything more difficult? How does this end up in the long run? And I think we will start to realize that anger generally doesn't take us where we want to go. And he continues, therefore, So therefore, if we're being quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, if we're not letting anger root and produce things we don't want, therefore, get rid of all moral filth and the evil that is so prevalent, and humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Which, of course, this all applies to the first century. It's not things now. Moral filth, evil around us that is prevalent, that's our world. That's the world in which we live. And instead, humbly accept the word planted in you, which can save you. Get rid of all. Now, what does that mean? How extreme do we want to be with this? I don't know. And I wish I had the clean and simple answer for you. I do know that it seems to me that this is not a command that we can go too far with. If you think of everything that is slightly toward the evil side in life, if you just knocked all that out of your life, would your life as a result for God be better or worse than it is today? I think if we're honest with each other, we would say better. Now, does that get rid of a lot of things that we enjoy? Probably. Does that get rid of a lot of things that are borderline that we could rationalize our way through? Probably. But does it make our lives better than they are now, more godly than they are now? And I would think, yeah, it does. So when he says get rid of all, again, he's talking to everyone. He's talking to brothers and sisters. He has told us to take note. And now he says you've got to now do something. If you're going to believe all of these things, you've got to get rid of all of the things that stand in the way of it. And I don't know what that is for you. I have a better idea of what it is for me, although I'm probably not always honest with myself about it. But there are things that each of us need to get rid of in our lives. And so James would say, get rid of all of it. Then he gets really personal. Do not merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves. Do what it says. Do what it says. Great to know this book. Really, really good to know this book, to know the things in it. All of us, I think, as much as some of us know or don't know, we could all know more. We could all study more. We could all learn more. We could all memorize more. Good to know this. But if this is just stuff that we know and not something that we do, then this is just a book. If you walk into my office right now, might need to be cleaned up first. If you walk into my office right now, there is on a shelf behind my desk probably about 15,000 baseball cards. All in little boxes or notebooks, or it's my childhood of the 80s that there's not room for in my apartment. They're on my shelves behind my desk. I could right now start rattling off statistics of the Atlanta Braves of the 1980s to you that I watched when I was a kid. I wish I could push those out of my mind and put something worthwhile into it some days. Sometimes we get to know the facts. We get to know maybe even where some things are, maybe even memorize some stuff. But if we are not doing those things, it does not matter in our lives. And so James will say, okay, it's not enough just to know. Now you have to do. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks at his face in a mirror and after looking at himself goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. And I want you to think about this for a minute. I was talking to my wife this morning about this, and I was thinking, I keep trying to wrap my brain around what's a good way to look at this. And she said that this is why I talk to her about these things, because she's smarter than I am. She said, babies. And I thought, yeah. That's it. It's remember small kids, you know, maybe even toddlers, when they would see themselves in a mirror, and it was like they were seeing another person. They could not completely comprehend, that's me there. And even in doing all the same things, and then the next thing that came to my mind, honestly, was puppies. And if you've ever seen a dog with a mirror and sitting there barking at it and everything else, you know that there is a simplicity of mind in those two. And so when James says to us, when you read these things, when you know the word, and you don't do it, that's who you are. You are someone who has not matured, or you are that cute little puppy that everybody laughs at that just doesn't know better, and that's not who you want to be. Who you want to be is something that has come beyond that. The thought of looking in the mirror, and as much as some of us might like to forget what it looks like in the mirror, we know. We know what to expect when we get there. We're not going to be shocked. We know who we are over there. And though we may want to look different, it's still going to be pretty truthful with us in that mirror. Spiritually, when we look in the mirror, what do we see? Do we see who we want to be? Do we see something that's just not moving in the right direction? Do we see somebody that knows a lot of facts and is not doing? And again, to the idea of what you produce, if what you see in the mirror is not what you want to produce, then something has to change. This is where James would say, quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, getting rid of all this stuff in life that you do not need. But whoever looks intently into the perfect law that gives freedom and continues in it, not forgetting what they have heard, but doing it, they will be blessed in what they do. Continues in it, not forgetting, but doing, they will be blessed in what they do. And I love the fact that he makes this law about freedom. So if there's one thing we get here in America in 2015, it's freedom. We like freedom. We like our freedom of whatever. Get the idea of freedom, and usually we don't connect freedom and law. And this is where things get a little confusing if you think in the world standpoint, because if he is telling us that we're not supposed to be angry, he's telling us we've got to be careful about what we say, and he's telling us to get rid of all this fun stuff, the way the world would look at it, that doesn't sound like freedom, does it? That sounds like more rules. Sounds like things that make life more dull and less exciting. And what James would say to us is, no, when we live life in this way, it is freeing. Do you know how great it is when there are a group of people that are talking and you come up and it gets quieter and you start to assume it must be bad and about you? Do you know how great it would be to not worry about that? Do you know how great it would be to live life in such a way that if people were talking and it got kind of quieter and you just didn't even consider the fact that it might be about you, or you knew that if it was about you and it was bad, that it wasn't true? Because you were living in such a way that that's not what happens. I made a joke about Beth in class this morning about being a person that was causing trouble. And everybody in class laughed because the thought of Beth causing trouble is funny. Because Beth doesn't cause trouble. Beth is one of the kindest, sweetest people I know. And I thought to myself, I wish somebody would make that joke about me. And everybody would laugh because it's just impossible. What if we all started to live life more in that way? And James would tell us that's about as freeing as it gets. When you don't have to worry about unintended consequences of things. It's tough sometimes because we live our lives and we live our lives too much like the world around us lives. But if we are the people God calls us to be, there's a lot of freedom that comes with that and a lot of freedom in how we live. Those who consider themselves religious and yet do not keep a tight rein on their tongues deceive themselves and their religion is worthless. Part of being religious people is how we handle the things that we say. It's kind of bringing this thought back around full circle. Slow to speak, slow to become angry. If religious people were quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry, how would the world look at us then? The world does not like religion for the most part, at least that's what we're told. I think a big piece of that is what we have shown them as to who we are versus what we're supposed to be. That religion is worthless, but the religion that is true is those of us who keep a tight rein on our tongues instead of just letting loose with what we want to say. Religion that God our fathers accepts as pure and faultless as this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself from being polluted by the world. We can do something, be something that is pure and that is faultless. And a lot of us might look into our own lives and think, not pure and not faultless. And God would say to us, then you can change that. It's the beauty of God, again and again in Scripture, is people continue to mess up, God continues to chase after them and continues to let them know that they can be different than who they are now. And for each of us, he brings us that same message this morning. We can be different if we will just begin to listen first and then to do. And if you look into your own life and realize that you're doing maybe not as much listening as you ought, maybe a little more talking than you should, and not nearly as much doing as you should, then you are probably like most of us. The reason we love the book of James so much is because it speaks into who we are. We see this around us every day. I can get up here all day and talk about listening and not speaking too quickly and not getting angry and doing the things we're supposed to do, and I feel like such a hypocrite when I stand here. Because I'm there too. I have the frustrations that take root in me. I have the times where I'm not listening the way I should and I'm already developing the next argument. I have the times where I let the anger take root. And I have the times where I know the right thing to do and I don't do it. And for each of us this morning, there's hope. There's hope because Jesus sent his son here to die. And we remembered it this morning and what we did. Because of that, we can be different and we can be with him. So this morning, if you're not a part of that, we would love for you to become a part of that. We'd love to hear your confession that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and the Lord of your life. We would love to baptize you and immerse you in the water back here. We'd love for your life to be changed forever. We'd like a couple weeks down the road to give you a Bible. And if you have already been there and that day seems like so long ago, we can be renewed. And if you have done a lot of knowing but not doing, this can be the week that changes. Like the challenge Tyler gave to us during our communion time. We can go out and do and be a force in this community because that is what we have been called to do. This morning, if you have any needs, something we can pray about, or if you'd like to take on Christ in baptism, please come as we stand and sing.